Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 10th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
What are we going to talk about today, buddy?
Well, we got this interesting stat. And I say interesting stat because I'm not one of these conspiracy theorists, but I'm also a pragmatic person, and I know that stats could be twisted to say whatever you want, right?
Yep.
So maybe this is, I don't think so, but it's an interesting stat, regardless. Our good friends at Global Poker Index, and of course they own HandleMob database now too, and they crunched the numbers, and they said compared to 2013, the number of tournament entries without rebuys has increased by 9.4%, and measured by total money collected from buy-ins, the market has grown by 6.7%, or 5.2% when rebuys are excluded. And they say that headline shows that more people are playing tournaments, but at a slightly lower average buy-in.
Yeah, it's not scientific, so it's hard to just be excited by that. It's great that they're spinning it, you know, that they're in the industry to promote poker, so there's no reason why they wouldn't, you know, want positive information put out there that the community is growing again and whatever. That's the thing, is that they don't track all tournaments on HandleMob. They have to qualify to be on HandleMob. The information has to be sent to them. It has nothing to do with daily tournaments. And you know what I mean?
It's well, just yeah, they started working hard to get daily tournaments listed in there now, obviously.
Right, but know. The numbers, too? I mean, they're not getting the numbers from
right,
local
exactly.
places sending them how many are. So you may get results from a lot of events, and that gives you the numbers of entries and stuff, but really you're not getting the 55 buy-in at the local dog track, or you know, I mean, you're just not getting it. So, I mean,
right, of course, so it's not complete, obviously, but
right.
I think the comparison is over the bigger tournaments that they have been tracking, which hasn't changed, I don't think. You know, let's focus on the positive, then we can go back to the conspiracy theories part of it, right? And the positive does show that people are playing more tournaments. And I think what's interesting is at a slightly lower average buy, which I think is the trend that we've been seeing lately, right? You know, remember back when we started this show, you know, you put on a major tournament series, if you had a buy in less than 10,000, you were laughed at, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's very few $10,000 buy in main events anywhere. So now it's, you know, even 5,000 are hard to find. Now it's down to, you know, 1650 is usually where they are now, right? So, so one way of spinning it, obviously, is people are spending the same amount of money on poker. They're just playing smaller tournaments and playing more of them, right? That could be one way of saying it.
Let me ask you, within this story, did it say that it was comparing apples to apples? Like it was saying, okay, here are the 25 tournaments from 2013 that we tracked that were actually run again in 2014, and so now we're comparing those numbers to these numbers, and here's the results? Or are they doing an overall thing, and there might have been
tournaments? That's a good point.
Then it's a huge positive.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? So if they are comparing literally apples to apples, then it's a huge positive, because, okay, so we had 17,000 people enter these 25 tournaments in 2013. Now we have 18,500 or whatever, you know, whatever it would be, 20,000. And they're the same exact tournaments, same exact series, just more people are there. And the buy-ins could change within those series, because that's what they're saying here, that the average buy-in went down a little bit.
But if it's the same tournament and there's more people playing in them, then that's definitely an absolute positive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's how I spin it. If that's what they're saying, that's great. If they're just saying numbers generally overall are up, that then it's like, okay, but how many tournaments do you really keep track of, and or you keep track of all of them? So that's why it's so difficult to be. You can't say it's scientific, but it sounds good, so I'm on board with it.
Yeah, we'll ride the positive part of it.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. We'll enjoy and hope that means, because you know, and it's probably a direct reflection of the economy, because the economy's coming back.
That's true too.
Right. Yep. So more people have more money to spend and more time, and they're spending money on poker, the things they like to do. So, I'm happy. I mean, like I said, it's can only be. It's not like they're taking bad news and trying to spin it good. They're taking news that they're getting from their information, their data, and telling us this is what it is. So they have no reason to be wrong about that.
Right, right. But you know, on a smaller scale too. I mean, I look at a couple of rooms that we deal with, like Thunder Valley, where our World Championship is going to be again this year, and actually we're having two Antioch Poker Tour events again there this year. Go back to 2013; they did one series a year of any kind.
Right,
right. And now they're doing, I believe it's six series this year. You know, two with us and then four others as well, too. Could be wrong on that, but might be more than that. But so that's an example of a pretty decent-sized room that has significantly increased its tournament business since 2013, where they started these numbers. So yeah. So there are places that it's verifiable that people are actually playing more at those places. So and I'm sure probably somebody else could say, hey, well, hey, this room used to have four series, now they're down to two.
But, right, or this room closed and whatever. But that, exactly. But still, I mean, if they're using legitimate numbers, which they are, because that's what they do, they're a tracking system, and they're the Hendon mob, so, and if it's comparing apples to apples, this is really good news for us, because, man, I mean, 10% is almost 10% entries without rebuys. That's pretty significant, when you consider that 10% of the people only cash, you know what I mean? So now you're talking about 10% of the field increasing, it's pretty good, so I hope that it's a trend.
If you invest your money, I mean, you'd be excited to get 9.4%.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So if you're investing in poker, there you go. There's your 10% increase. So but it can only be good news. It's not bad news. So that's great.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, we do have some bad news this week, too. David Devilfish Oliott was one of the, in my opinion, one of the first stars of poker's TV era. Died this week of cancer, surrounded by his family. His illness wasn't really readily known, I don't think, until the last couple of months, which I guess usually is the case with cancer. But he's passed on. And interesting thing that I like to bring up, you know, because it's always tough when someone passes away. Obviously, it's a very sad thing. And but one of the criticism I've seen from people is that everybody's a hero in death, right? Mm-hmm. That everybody comes out of the woodwork and say, oh, he's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. And almost uniformly throughout everywhere I've been looking, people have just been lavishing praise on him. But there's a couple people that pointed out, hey, I really don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but I really didn't like this guy. Mm-hmm. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And that's tough to say in depth, too. But I think overwhelmingly people had a really good opinion of him. And he certainly was a character, I think, right?
Okay, here's the deal with David. To me, he was totally polarizing. Either you loved him or you hated him, in the sense that you loved the way he played and you loved that he was entertaining.
Right.
I mean, because here was the deal. Back in the day, I love saying that. When you were, before we were into this magazine and whatever, even before, during the show, when we first started the show, I would still, on Wednesday nights, turn on the Travel Channel eagerly and just salivating, right, hoping to see who was going to be on the show that week. And if he was on, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good week, because he's going to get under the guy's skin, or he's going to be flamboyant with all his jewelry, and he's going to be funny, because he was funny as hell. And there were some times where you're like, oh, he's a jerk. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, yes, he was clearly somebody that would... Could elicit those types of comments in death. I'm not going to say I didn't like him, and I'm not going to say I liked him. I'm just going to say that when he was on TV, I was watching it.
It was good TV, right?
He was good TV, and he's a good player. I mean, he had a great jewelry business that probably helped fund his bankroll, and
sure,
that it couldn't hurt. Plus, he got free advertising for his business with the jewelry he wore. He used to wear the one of those looked like brass knuckles, but it was all diamonds, you know what I mean? So he was...
yeah, don't want to get in a fight with him.
Yeah, so, but, yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is it hurts that our magazine is so hyper-local now that I'm removed from these things now because I don't have time to pay attention to the national scene that much anymore, that I didn't even really know he was sick. And I know it was hidden for a long time, and they didn't really find out for a couple of months, but there was a time where I would have known right away when this guy had cancer. Right. You know, and now I didn't even know that he died. I saw it on IMDb, and I messaged you, and I'm like, holy cow. I didn't even, and that's the thing. That shows you, you know, the few moments that I have to do something for myself. I'm laying in bed on an iPad at 2 in the morning looking at the IMDb news feed instead of PokerNewsDaily.com, which is where you learn this. So it just shows you how my life has changed since we started this magazine and started the show, really. I'm not trying to turn his death into our moment here. I'm just saying I feel bad that he's gone. He was clearly one of the guys that helped this game blow up, and whether you liked him or not. And he was entertaining, and he was talented. He got some titles, and he got far, and he made some final tables. And it was hard to understand what he said because that accent was so thick.
Right.
Sometimes, but I liked watching him. Whether you liked him or not, I liked watching him. He was a cool character.
Well, yeah, I think this is a good point that they bring up when people, the whole way he's a hero in death kind of thing, they're different people. But we're talking about celebrities, and obviously he was a poker celebrity, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I argue with friends about is that, I never met him. I don't believe I did. Certainly wasn't friends with him, and certainly never expected I would be friends with him, just like with lots of celebrities that we watch on TV, right?
Right.
So for me, my enjoyment comes from what they do for me, and what they do for me is entertain me, you know, whether it's on TV or whatever, right?
Right.
And so that's the extent of my like or dislike of a person, is whether they're entertaining me. Now, obviously, they do stuff in their personal life that I don't agree with, knocks them down a peg or two, but they're not friends, right? You know? I would hold you to a higher standard than I would hold, you know, Devilfish, right?
Right.
So, you know, I also think that's kind of an interesting thing. Of course, the people that were negative about him were people that had worked with him or, you know, played with him or things like that, so that they had a richer relationship with him than I did. But yeah, definitely for TV, you're right. Going back to that golden era, I call it, is, you know, and you're right. It was appointment TV back then for us.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it was the same players almost all the time. Every once in a while, you had that upstart amateur that got on and made us all excited that it could be us someday. But for the most part, you tuned in to see the same group of players, you know. And it was almost like, superheroes on cartoons when you were a kid, right? You know, hey, who is it going to be Wonder Woman or Batman this week?
Yeah.
And then you get excited. So, to that extent, he definitely was a very interesting one. And then I'll also say the other thing I think is really cool, and it's because I can't do it, but I like guys that dress up to play poker.
Yeah. Like Sammy Farha and Devilfish.
Right.
Those are the guys.
Yeah, back in the day, he was always wearing a suit when he played, right?
Yeah.
It's funny, all the photos I've seen of him this week, he was very casual dressed. So maybe he got rid of that after a while, after the TV boom. But I always thought that was kind of classy. And, you're not going to see me dressing up in a suit to play poker. So, I'm not going to criticize anybody who doesn't. But it is kind of classy. And that I'm always going to remember about him.
Here's the deal. He was the type of guy that would dress young, even though he was older. He was born in 54, I think. So when you think about that, I mean, I was born in 70, and he was 16 years older than me, but he was wearing clothes that guys who were 16 years younger than me were wearing or more. You know, he would have on Affliction?
Oh, yeah.
I saw him at the World Series, I'd see him at the World Series every year we went out. I don't think I actually talked to him, though. I don't remember interviewing him. Who was the other guy? Marcel Lusk, I remember interviewing when he got upset. He got knocked out of a tournament. He was upset. He was another guy that was like the era. He dressed up when he played.
Right.
And he had the sunglasses upside down and everything. But yeah, you're right. I mean, these guys, they stayed with the times. They stayed classy with their clothes and they made it an event. You're right. It was like Farha would... I remember they had a segment on Farha where they brought him in his closet, a walk-in closet, and they were looking at all his clothes and stuff or something like that. And it was just like... Absolutely, you know, Devilfish dressed the part. And even when he didn't, he would still wear, like, those Adidas track suits. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
was just cool. I remember seeing him thinking, dude, aren't you like way older than me? Why are you dressed? But he just, that's it. He just, he stayed young at heart, and he dressed the part of a superstar poker player. And when you talked about you didn't know what was going to be on for the cartoon, to me, for me, it was bowling in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I had favorite bowlers, Mark Roth, when I was growing up. I wanted to see him bowl. So on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock, they didn't have internet. You didn't know who was the top five for the stepladder finals.
Right.
You didn't have the internet. You wanted to know, you were surprised that afternoon who was going to be on the show. And same with poker. You know, even though we had the internet, I didn't realize that these tournaments were played months before. You know, I was naive. I just turned on the Travel Channel, and please let Doyle Brunson or Phil Ivey or Devilfish be on tonight so I have you entertained, or Tony G, you know. And, you know, the poker world is definitely lesser for having this guy. I don't care if he was a jerk to you or even had that jerky persona. As far as the game itself, people tuned in when they saw this guy on, and the more people tune in, the more people fall in love with the game. The more fall in love with the game, the more the game's going to survive and be strong, and that's what we need. So we're definitely lesser for him being gone.
Absolutely. All right, some Annie updates. If you think you'll be Annie Up's MPD, most popular dealer, head on over to annieupmagazine.com/dealers and fill out the quick free application. Or if you know a dealer, let he or she know about it so they can apply. Remember, the deadline to apply is April 22nd, so we're getting close. And after that, our staff will winnow the applicants down to the top 50, and then we'll open the voting to the masses. Five finalists will move on to a final vote, where the winner will get a $1,000 prize package, including any of Poker Cruise. Other four finalists will win prizes too, and everyone who votes will be eligible to win prizes as well. And one more time, that website is antiupmagazine.com/dealers. Deadline is April 22nd.
You know, the key with that, I think, for us, is the second part of that first sentence, or a second sentence, when you say, or if you know a dealer, because I don't think that many dealers are listening to us.
I don't know. Some do. Well, yeah, but yeah, you're right. I think by and large,
if you're playing in a live poker room and you have a dealer that you like, just go to him and her and say, hey, you know what? Andy's got this contest. You can win a free cruise if you get enough people to vote for you, blah, blah, blah. And I think you're a great dealer. You make my time better here and special here, and I think you should. And look, your free advertising for your poker room, blah, 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 and spread the word. So really, if you're a listener and you're playing, just remember that. MPD, MPD, MPD. You got to say it three times, otherwise you'll forget it.
Yeah, and I got to say, there's some poker dealers all of a sudden are getting shy, which is something I don't normally, an adjective I usually don't use for poker dealers, right?
Yeah.
You know, we had a couple on Twitter. You know, I really don't want to nominate myself. I wish somebody else could nominate me. Well, I'm like, all right, well. It's time to nominate yourself, all right? Just get in there. And don't worry. And after that, then it's the masses that are voting. So it's not like, you know, doing campaign speeches. So, you know,
well, takes a couple minutes and apply. The funny thing about that, though, is if they're shy, they're not going to be most popular dealer.
Right.
You know, they're not most popular because they're not going to go on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and promote themselves and push it in the room and talk to people about themselves, because no one's going to know that they're to be voted for. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think they're going to be someone who's pretty outgoing and whatever, so an extrovert. But
yeah, the other thing I think is kind of funny is seeing some of the early campaigns going with people that haven't even applied yet. They're like, oh, we got to get Joe the Pancake Johnson.
Joe the Pancake.
They all have nicknames, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's right, Pancake. You got to get in this. You know, there's like seven messages on our comments on a Facebook page to get Pancake to enter. So Pancake. That's the kind of stuff that I think is going to be really fun about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and then one more reminder, don't forget the tournament on RaiderPoker.net on Sunday with the top 20% of the field to win a cruise package for November 7th sailing out of Tampa. Remember, subscription poker is permitted in 35 states and the District of Columbia, and players are given a set amount of Raiders to play with for their $16.95 monthly subscription fee, and RaiderPoker.net is going to host the same tournament. April 26th is when it's going to be, not this Sunday, April 26th.
Oh, okay.
But you can play daily multi-table and single-table satellites leading up to it. I knew I should have updated that.
Oh, that was probably because of the one from last week. That's all. You just, yeah, but yeah. So April 26th is your chance to play and win for free. So,
bottom line, just sign up and get your plans, and then you'll
bottom line.
The tournament is, yeah, sorry.
Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This is from Mr. No Swag. I haven't heard from him in a while, and it's actually an audio clip, so let's listen in.
He's probably upset that we haven't given him any swag yet, probably.
Here we go.
Hello, boys. Mr. No Swag here. Wanted to call and give you an idea. Now that you have this booming tournament series, maybe you could bring it to Choctaw, which I know you guys are aware of, right here in on the border of Texas and Oklahoma. They do a couple of poker series themselves that are quite successful, and they also have the WSOP and the card player tournament series, which do quite well. I thought it might be a great expanse of your tournament series, and also give the chance to promote you guys a little bit more. They don't do a whole lot for you there at Choctaw as far as, you know, the magazine and things like that, but there you go. Just an idea. Hope you guys have a great one. Be safe and keep winning.
I always think it's interesting when people call us or email us or come up to me at an event and say, hey, you should bring the Antioch Poker Tour here.
Yeah, like it's our choice.
Right? And so I have to remind, and I'm not picking on people, just probably don't understand how this works, but it's not you and I sitting around in a big, you know, huge chair and having people come to us and make proposals, and then we go, all right, today we're going to go here. It's quite the opposite. You know, we're out there selling to the rooms and trying to convince them what Antioch can bring to their property if they bring the Antioch Poker Tour to them. So what I would say to Mr. No Swag and other listeners out there, if you want the Antioch Poker Tour to come to your favorite poker room, the best thing you can do is go to the manager's floors there and say, hey, I really want you to have an Antioch Poker Tour event here. Because here's what happens is when managers keep hearing that over and over, let's say they're year one of 30 people that come up to them in a week and say, oh, gosh, we've got to have an Antioch Poker Tour event here or an Antioch Poker Cruise giveaway. Now they know they have demand for it, right?
Yeah.
And it's easier for them to pull the trigger on doing it with us. So that's the best thing I can suggest to Mr. No Swag and other folks out there, because we would love to fill up our calendar and bring the Antioch Poker Tour all around the country. But obviously we need some poker room managers that are interested in having us.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself, buddy.
Sure you could have, but no need to.
Hey, you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our good friend Phil Dobrikin out in Vancouver. He says, in a pub night free roll, we're on the river and player A goes all in. Player B turns his hand over and throws him into the middle of the table without saying anything. Player A thinks player B folded and opens his hand to show a bluff. The tournament director ruled that player B's hand was live and won the pot. Does opening your hand without pushing the chips in or making a verbal call constitute
that's great work.
I'm reading it from far away here.
Constitute
a call or a fold? Does the fact that the cards cross the call line in the on the table make a difference?
Right out of the gate, I always this gives me the red ass. There's no such thing as a call line.
I know.
In some rooms, that line's a betting line. Most rooms, it's just decorative. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
But it's not a fold line. It's not a muck line. It's not a call line. If anything, it's a bet line. And in most rooms, it's not. So let's just get that out of everybody's head already. Okay? Yeah.
This line means nothing.
Yes. Unless somebody specifically says it, that it means it's a betting line, that's what it is. If not, it's nothing else. It's never, ever going to be a mucking line. Never, ever going to be a call line. Never, ever, ever, ever. I don't know. What do you think about this? Obviously, we don't need Sam. It's fairly easy.
No, absolutely. First of all, his question is, does opening your hand without pushing chips in or making a verbal call constitute a call or a fold? No. It depends on the rules, first of all, but in most time, you know, a lot of times you're allowed to show your cards to get a reaction. So the fact that he didn't fold them and it didn't touch any muck, he just turned them up. Okay, you may have a rule in your pub free roll that says once you expose your hand, it's dead and the other guy automatically wins. But clearly you don't, because your tournament director came over and said, oh, his hand's live. He didn't say fold. He didn't touch the muck with him. He wins because the other person did fold and put his hand in the muck. Or whatever, he showed a bluff, and so his hand wasn't good enough to win because cards speak. So I think that the fact that this guy did it means he was a Deutsche Bank because he was looking for some sort of angle shoot here. But then I don't know if he did say call really quietly and nobody heard it. I mean, I don't have any more information here. That wasn't happening.
We've got a little bit of missing information here that I think is key to me is if the guy turned his hand over, exposed it. To me, nothing happens at this point, right?
Right.
Hand's not mucked. But he hasn't called yet, right? So he can't be awarded the pot, I don't think. So what I don't know here is, did he turn it over to get a read on a player? And if that's the case, then depending on the room, that might be a penalty, but won't have anything to do with this hand, right?
Right.
And once you turn it over, at that point, if you're the player that went all in, problem's on your end now. Because there's no reason to turn your hand over if you're confused as to what's going on with the action. You know, if you're confused what's going on, you ask the dealer, hey, is that hand live or dead? And the dealer says, oh, it's dead, and picks up and mucks it. Then you push the pot. But once you turn over your bluff, now you've tabled a hand. And now the guy, you know, for whatever reason, the guy that didn't say anything at this point, now his hand is still live, so he sees your hand is inferior, and now, you know, unless he's busy trying to get the cocktail wages attention, he's going to say call, right?
Yeah.
So that's, but it didn't say that he, at any point, that he actually said call. So I have to assume that he did at some point. It was just missing from the email. Because otherwise, you know, if he doesn't call, he can't be awarded the pot, right?
Right.
So then you're just in this, you know, Texas standoff here, right? You got two exposed hands and action pending, and then what do you do if you're with a bluffer guy? You're going to call the clock on the guy? All right, you got 1 minute to decide whether your hand is clearly better than mine, and you're going to call. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, but I think the final thing, the big reminder to folks is none of this call line, muck line, and don't expose your hand if the dealer tells you to.
Actually, I have the final point. Right. Player A... That's also, for those who believe in it, bad. That's karma. Because
right.
You're bluffing and you're showing the bluff to rub it in, and then you're realizing, I'm losing. You know what I mean? That, if you're going to pull off a bluff, just fold the cards when you win. You know, now you showed the bluff, and you lost because you showed the bluff. If you didn't do anything, the guy would have, you still could have just said, is that a call or a fold, or what's going on here? But because you thought he folded, and then you show your bluff, now it's like, ha ha, I'm showing a bluff, I got away. Dope! I didn't get away with this, I lose. Well, there you go. That's another reason to not just show a bluff and rub it in.
Right.
You know? So don't do it.
Right, exactly.
Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Very exciting stuff.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $4-$8 Omaha 8 game. We're the youngest at the table, and there seems to be a lot of calling stations. We bought in for $200 and currently sit with $150, down about $50. The action is seven-handed. We're in the big blind and post, as does the small blind. The under-the-gun folds, plus one calls, MP calls, hijack calls, button raises to eight, small blind calls, and we look down at the king of hearts, king of spades, queen of hearts, nine of spades. Yeah, the 9 in one-way hand really aren't the greatest, but I just can't fold these kings. We call. Plus 1 calls, MP calls, hijack calls, and we're going to a flop with about $40 in the pot. The flop comes down the king of clubs, jack of hearts, 8 of hearts. This is a pretty decent flop for us. We've got the nuts right now, and redraws to top boat, and if the ace of hearts comes, we'll have the nut flush. The small blind checks, and we bet. Plus 1 folds, MP calls, hijack folds, and the button raises us to $8. Small blind folds, we make it 12, it's folded back around to the button who caps it, and we call. Nut flush draw? With nearly $80 in the pot, we're met with some mixed emotions as the 4 of hearts comes off on the turn. I really don't like this card, and I hate being out of position. We check. After a bit of thought, our opponent checks behind. Huh? The button is an older guy who knows what he's doing and loves to talk at the table. He's been drinking a bit tonight and has become quiet during this hand. He takes the game seriously, but likes to have fun and joke around at the same time. I'm really not sure why he'd check here, but I'm definitely going to proceed with caution. The river is the tray of clubs. This completes the low, and there was already a flush possible. We're still in caution mode with the second nuts, so we check. This time our opponent bets. What's the move?
All right, wait a minute. I'm a little confused by this this O'Malley's move, Chris.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. I'm not folding second nut flush to one final bet.
Right.
Obviously, because we have no low and don't have the nut high, it seems pretty reckless to raise. I guess you could make a case that our opponent's taking a stab at this with a weaker high and no low, and we might scoop it by raising and getting him to fold. But I think that's a move that almost never works in limit. And the downside is getting raised again and having to call and getting scooped. So to me, this seems pretty straightforward. It's one more bet, call. But maybe I'm missing something.
No, I mean, I even wrote second nut flush in a split pot game, heads up, and all I have to do is call one more big pot. I mean, one more bet to win a big pot. Yep, I call. I mean, really, I know it's only going to win half the pot, but it's still a chance I can win both. He could be bluffing. And even so, one bet to win all those bets. When he could be going one way and we're going the other way, which happens so many. How many times if some guy have the nut low and he's heads up and he just keeps pumping and hoping you think he's scooping,
right?
Exactly. You know, and you're gonna fold. But for one bet, I can't let it go. So I don't know what's gonna happen, but there's no way with the second nut flush, that and a low game possible, you know, a low hand possible that I'm letting it go. So for one bet, so no, I'm not seeing it if there's something there that I'm missing too. But I'm doing the same thing as you.
All right,
here we go. Part two.
Hello again. This hand seems like it's the nut flush, but why the check on the turn? Was he trying to sucker us into betting into him on the river? Does he have the low locked up? Why is he so quiet all of a sudden? I think we can rest assured that the best case scenario is we're only in the running for half of this pot. So it's not the 11-1 odds as it may seem. Really, we have to risk $8 to win about 50. While that's still around 5.5-1 odds, are they worth it? We only have to be right about 20% of the time to make this profitable. Of course, a bet saved is a bet earned, and you really shouldn't go throwing good money after bad. We protected our hand when we had the nuts, and now, isn't it logical to throw it away since we're facing heat, and we don't? I might get scorched for this, but I'm folding. We throw our cards into the muck face up, much to the table's surprise. Nut, nut! Our opponent exclaims, flipping over the ace of hearts, tray of hearts, deuce, deuce. Ugh. Why can't the board come out like that when we've got cards like those? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying in Omaha 8, if you don't have the nuts, it's likely somebody else does. I'm proud of this fold. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, I guess we get the answer to what we're missing. Right. It never occurred to me to think about folding. I guess that's what O'Malley's dilemma was. But I guess it does bring up a good discussion to have about limit. And I think this is where our no limit friends get confused when we keep talking about, save a bet, win a bet. In this case, it's just one bet. And O'Malley is right. We only need to be right about 20% of the time to make this call profitable. And, of course, yes, if all signs point to us holding a loser, then we should fold. I think that's where people get confused in limit. Oh, you know, I've heard of those guys in handicap, they is limit, so you got to call that last bet. You know, you're getting 20-1 on your money, but if it's clear
right.
that your opponent has a flush because of whatever reason you put together, then you're just throwing money away, right?
Right.
But generally, you're not that clear, right? And this is one of those cases, I think. I certainly didn't see all signs pointing that way to this hand, so obviously it's good that O'Malley did and saved that bet, but generally speaking, I think if there's any question in your mind, it's worth making that call.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was worth it. You know, of course he could have ace-deuce of hearts, which is what he probably ended up having, or at least ace-deuce and then the ace of hearts and some other heart, but to me, for the amount of money that got in there with the raise, and we had that set at one point, and ended up backing into the second nut flush, and I mean, I think that one bet is always worth a call when the pot's big enough and it's a split pot game and it's not absolutely clear. I don't even know how it could be absolutely clear with the way this hand came down. There's no way.
Yeah, this particular hand, no. But there have been situations in limit, and particularly in Omaha, I think, where nothing but losing the hand makes sense to me. I mean, just the way the action's gone with my opponent just points to the fact that he has to have it. And there are times like that happen. They don't come very often, I don't think, but yeah. There are times when it just doesn't make sense that he could have anything that you could beat. But this clearly wasn't one of those, I didn't think.
All right, like in a wheel, when it's like 3, 4, 5 on the board, and you have like a set or something, and this guy raised pre-flop, and he's just betting it the whole way. You know he's got the wheel, and he's got ace-deuce. And so you end up making a set on the river or something weird. You know, or you have ace-six, You know what I mean? You know you're not going to win that hand. You know this guy's got the wheel. So those are the cases where I know I'm folding because I know he has to have the wheel. Especially in a multi-way pot where you got three or four guys in there playing and they're all betting and raising with 3, 4, 5 on the board. You know somebody has ace deuce. And so you somehow were in the hand because you were hoping for a backdoor or even just you had a flush draw and didn't get there and then you end up making a set or a different low. You know, that's when you know you're bait. So yeah, I guess it does happen. But in this hand, one call, one bet, you know, to call for that pot and for what we had in our hand, absolutely, I'm making that call every time.
Every time. Twice on Sunday. If I play on Sunday. It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands, your situations, the podcast at antiupmagazine.com, or you can call our hotline and send a hand in. This might be the first audio Hand of the Week we've ever had, is it?
No.
It's not.
Okay. No, it's not. It's definitely not. But it's the first one we've had in a long time.
In a long time. Okay. Yes. Well, that's good because I don't have very long memories. So it's the first one that I remember.
Yeah, it's not the first, but it is a long time.
It comes from our good friend Chappy Joker, who is becoming a new frequent contributor. So we'll just play the clip and then we'll strategize.
All right, here we go.
Hi, guys. This is your buddy, Chappy Joker from Indianapolis, Indiana. I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on a hand that I had this past Saturday in a single table tournament that I had at my house. It was heads up. The blinds are 2,500, 5,000 with a 500 ante. I was in the big blind. The villain raised to 10,000, and I completed called with the 6-7 of diamonds. The flop comes 10-10-9, and it's two spades. We both checked. The turn brought the 8, which gives me the low end straight. I raised to 30,000, about half my stack. He had a 2-to-1 chip advantage on me. I raised to 30,000. He went all in, and I quickly called. The board ran out 4. He ended up having the queen jack to have the high straight. The question that I have is there any way that you guys would get away from that hand, a made straight, with the amount of chips that I had? We went back and forth over it again and again. I said that I would go to the mat every single time with that hand and with the chips that I had. Now, I know Scott's a short stack ninja, and he'll probably say no, and he could play out that hand. But to me, with that made straight, even though it is the low end, it's a made hand, and I put him on maybe ace-10, something like that, but when the board checked, on the flop, maybe he was slow playing it, but I did not put him, of course, on queen jack. Just wanted to get your guys' opinions and what your thoughts are on that hand, and if you guys could get away from it for that price. Again, I had maybe 40,000 behind after the initial 30,000 raise. So just let me know what you guys think, and keep up the good work. Thanks.
All right, so yes, any way I can get away from that hand with a made straight with his chip stack? What do you think?
I hate that question because it's not the right question to ask. The right question to ask is there any way I could have gotten away from this hand pre-flop? Yes! There, I've answered your question, Chappie. Next hand. All right, so basically the blinds are 2,500, 5,000 with a 500 ante. Got raised to 10 grand, which is only a min raise, and there's not a lot of money. I mean, there's also a bunch of dead money with that 5,000 in antes.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I guess I would call that extra. 5.
I'm going to go ahead and defend my good friend.
Yeah. I guess
if you fold here, you're making a mistake because you're right. There's a lot of dead money. Yeah. You've got a hand that can flop really big, and it's one bet. It's a mistake for the raise to have been a min raise, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, could you have gotten away from it pre-flop? Yes. And that could have ended all this horrible suffering you went through. but you're probably right. I don't think I do fold for 5. And then we find out later on that he had 60K and he only has to bet 5 more. You know what I mean? So, the fact that he had 60K to start the hand and it only cost him 5 with 6-7 of diamonds to get all that return on his money.
Sure.
Yeah, it probably is worth a call. But you could have gotten away from it then. I'm not saying you have to call, but yeah, statistically, it's a good call, even though you're going to be out of position the rest of the hand. So when it comes 10-10-9, two spades, and we check and then he checks, yeah, then okay, you got yourself into trouble because, boom, you hit your straight for free on the turn. It couldn't have happened any better for you had you not had the losing hand.
I guess, okay. My concern was the amount we bet out.
Right, so 30,000 is a lot. Right. I mean, that's pot-sized bet. But I guess he was maybe afraid something else could get there. I don't know, because he was maybe protecting it against the spades. But he could have been drawn dead already. He could have, but could have been dead.
And that's kind of the problem, I think, here, is that we don't even have the nut straight here, right? We have the very bottom straight on a paired board with two spades on board. So, you know, anything could happen on the river with that spade. But right now, you're right, we could be drawing dead to a boat, to quads, or, as we found out, to the queen jack.
Right,
so this is one of those hands where I'm in my mind, I'm like, ooh, I hit, but I'm not going to do a victory lap until I have the chips in front of me.
Yeah, this is like the 10th best hand.
Yeah, I'm inclined to check here and let somebody bluff at me, and then shock them by turning over my straight and going, wow, I didn't know you were that strong. Now, that being said, if I check here and our opponent shoves now, then we're back to the same decision. But what makes that decision easier is we don't have 30,000 in the pot right now, and we have it in our stack, right?
Right.
I think the fact that we bet half our stack there on a pot that's now, what is it, at least 25,000 before that, right?
Yeah, 27, almost. It was probably about 30,000, really. The right. Pot. You probably bet pot was what he did there.
Right. So, you know, now
there's 90 now in the pot.
30,000 to win 90,000.
Yeah. So you're getting 3-1 your money with a straight. That's hard to fold.
With a made hand.
Yeah.
That's tough to get away from.
What happened? I guess I don't think I get away from that hand. But I think. Here at Annie Up, we tend to try to learn from our mistakes and redo the hand, not being results-oriented, but thinking, okay, like you said, I have the ignorant end, the ass end, the low end, the poor end, the weak end of this straight. I think that I need to check there and let him bet. Let's say you do check there. He's not betting 30,000. He's betting maybe 15. Then we hem and haw. And we call the 15 to make it look like maybe we're trying to hit the spades. Then when a blank comes on the river, then you check again. Maybe he bets 15 or 20 or 25. And then we call. Now we've only, if it was 15 and 20, it's 35,000. We still have 25,000 left to play this game. That's still plenty. And if we had the best hand, we had the best hand. But that 30,000 bet was I think, the biggest mistake of everything.
Right, exactly.
And I mean that's the way I look at it, is you got to learn from your mistakes, not just that one question about can you get away from it. Could you get away from it? Yeah, you could. Because you don't have the nuts. You don't even have close to the nuts. So, I mean, jack, you know, a jack queen is not even the nuts. You know, your quads, full houses, because somebody would min raise with 10-9, you know, easily. Somebody could min raise with 9-9. You know, there are a lot of hands that beat you now. So could you have gotten away from it? Yeah, probably. It's pretty tight fold considering what you have. But I would never have led the aggression with the ass end of that straight.
Absolutely. I would have liked to check and see what happened here. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, it's unlikely to me that we're going to get all the chips in if we check this turn.
Mm-hmm.
Possible. Because you got to think the other person is scared that they don't have the nuts either, right?
Right.
They obviously feel strong about their hand like we did. But, you know, I can't see us checking and then moving all in on the turn. That's not going to happen. So they're going to bet something smaller now. I don't know if that's going to be 10,000, 15,000. And they're going to call that. And then if they do another 10 or 15, actually, it's probably going to be 15 or 20 on the river. That's probably the worst case, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe. So now you're talking 30, 40,000 put in the spot instead of 60,000, and you're still in the tournament?
It's to me, too, even though that wasn't the reason the guy checked the flop, it was a fishy check.
Right.
And so you have to be having your antenna up a little bit here saying, okay, it came 10-10-9, the guy checked. Okay, so even if that doesn't, when we bet 30 and then he shoves on us, he's not doing it with queen-queen. He right. like you said in the audio clip, he may have been doing it with a 10 in his hand. But does he really check with three tens and that coordinated board, 10-9 on the board and two spades? Is he really going to check there? He's got to get some money in to make the value. I mean, I just, unless it's absolute nuts like 10-9 or 9-9, you know, which would be a big hand, I just don't see him checking there because he wants you to catch up. In this case, if he had just three tens, he doesn't want you to catch up because catching up beats him. So for you to go bet 30 and then him to go all in on that 8, you could get away from it. If you really thought about it, what hand does he move all in there with? He doesn't move all in there with ace, ace, or three tens. I just don't think he does. Maybe he does.
And
maybe
he is. Those are the only hands that he's going to do it that we have beat, right?
Right, right.
Otherwise, he's got the queen jack like we have, or like he did, or
10-9,
10-10.
9-9. I mean, there are hands, even 8-8.
I guess he might do that on a spade draw, you know, but at that point he's got to look at our stack and know that we're not going to get away
from
it.
We're not going
to
fold,
right.
Doesn't
make very sense to do that. So, yeah. So at this point, I mean, once he moves all in, unless he just didn't pay attention to what we have, he's got to have us here, I think.
Yeah. Sorry, Chappie. Hey, thanks for sending in the audio clip, though. That's awesome. We appreciate it. Got the auto clip, got a lot of worked overtime this week. When, you know, we go in these cycles where we don't get anything, and then all of a sudden, boom, it fills the whole show. But speaking of that, Scott's going on a cruise, so the next show's going to be taped early. So, of course, let's take bets now as to what major news is going to happen next week that we're going to miss out on. So, yeah, Scott will be cruising. So enjoy yourself on the cruise, Scott. Be safe. Win lots of money. Earn lots of money. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at taped.
AntiUp is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.